Is it just me, or does it feel like the marketing playbook is always changing? Much like the age-old question, to skinny jean or to not skinny jean, marketing strategies can come and go and come back again. Who can keep up? Luckily, HubSpot makes it their job to keep marketers on trend and on track to hit their goals. Their 2024 State of Marketing Report is the all-in-one guide for everything happening this year and how marketers can best approach it all. HubSpot surveyed more than 1,400 marketing pros across the world and curated the top trends they're thinking about. Sure, there's AI, but there's so much more. The report covers everything from increasing awareness and engagement to ensuring privacy and boosting efficiency and growth. You get all the info you need to shape your strategy for the year and keep on winning into next year. Don't get caught hopping on an old trend. Visit HubSpot.com/state-of-marketing to get your free copy of the report.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Another Bite. Ariel here. In today's episode, we have special guest Ramon Van Meer, the genius behind Genius Litter. Hi, Ramon. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for the nice introduction.
Yes. So in case you folks have missed it, Genius Litter was the opening segment for episode 13 of this latest season of Shark Tank. Genius Litter is a health indicating kitty litter that changes color based on pH levels, making it easier to identify when or if your pet is sick. So you came in asking for $250,000 for 4% of your business, but actually ended up walking away with not one, but three sharks, getting $250,000 in capital for 8% stake and only 2% advisory shares for three sharks, which is pretty job well done right there, I think, for a masterclass in negotiation. Not an easy feat. But want to jump in a little bit into your background and kind of how you ended up getting on the show. So looking at your Twitter, I saw you gave your Twitter followers some really great behind the scenes content into what the audition process is like. Mm-hmm. So I'm very curious to know, what was your strategy leading up to the Shark Tank audition? And how did you prepare to effectively pitch Genius Litter to the sharks?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I posted a tweet about it that this was my fourth time auditioning for Shark Tank. So I started 4 years ago with an idea. Went through the process. There's a million rounds basically that you have to go through. And the first time, I think, you know, I didn't even pass round two or three. Second year, a couple rounds more. But every time I didn't pass basically the audition video round, where after you're talking with some casting directors, they're going to ask you to make a video with your pitch. It's like a 5 to 10 minute pitch. And yeah, I never passed that round. So for this year, I thought, okay, I assume like, okay, they're getting hundreds of audition videos that they're going to have to watch through. They're probably just going to, you know, just watch the first 30 seconds or 60 seconds and see like, oh, this is it or something. So I wanted to start off with something a little bit silly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, let me dress up like Einstein, because our litter is called Genius and Einstein is genius. I think, yeah, doesn't really have a connection, but I thought, okay, let me just dress up. And I went to a cat cafe that has all these cute little cats. Uh-huh. So I recorded the audition video there, dressed up as Einstein.
That's amazing. I actually like the Einstein tie-in.
Yeah. Yeah. The producers loved it too. When I heard back that, you know, I was able to go to the next round.
That's amazing. So you mentioned on your Twitter as well that you spent many hours preparing for this process. Was there a certain step in that process that really kind of helped you pay off when it came to preparing for the pitch?
Yeah, I'm an introvert person and I get nervous around cameras. I don't like cameras or the lights.
You and I both.
This is okay because this still feels like personal. But when you walk on the carpet, when you walk into the tank, everyone has to do their 1 or 2 minute pitch for the sharks. And they're not giving you redos. As soon as you go out there, you're just going to have to say it. And my biggest fear was I'm going to get a blackout and I'm going to forget the pitch. So I've spent so many times rehearsing the pitch. I printed out life-size heads of the sharks.
Yes, the cutouts. Yes, what happened to them?
I put them on my sofa. And then I basically prepped my pitch talking to an empty sofa with printed heads. My son thought I was crazy. But I was like, okay, I want to practice that it feels as real as possible, basically. But also practice with different tonalities. Like, how can I make the pitch even better? So my focus was making sure if I'm nervous, doesn't matter what happens, I can dream the pitch. At least I don't make mistakes there. Number two was watching a lot of Shark Tank, writing down what are the most common questions and then practicing those, making sure you know all the numbers and all the answers to the most obvious questions they're going to ask.
So on the pitch, you mentioned that you kind of had to find this balance between entertainment and memorable versus having more of like a traditional pitch meeting with investors. What are some of the tips you have in mind for other entrepreneurs that may be looking to pitch on Shark Tank?
Good question. I think understanding that at the end of the day, it's a TV show. So the producers that work on the TV side, their objective is to make the most exciting, entertaining TV. Not so much what could be a great product or investment for Mark Cuban to get richer off. No, their job is really to entertain people. So really having understand that it's not a pitch to a VC in San Francisco, you know, in a board meeting, you know, you're making TV. So that really helped. And also what the producers helped me with, because I'm an introvert by nature, is to over-exaggerate. So instead of like, hey, my name is Ramon, it's like really, hey, my name is Ramon Van Meer. What's a little bit cheesy in normal life, but it's TV. Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of the pitches on Shark Tank sound almost the same, because it's all like, you know, hey, my name is so-and-so. So fun, entertainment, sprinkle some fun into it and be outgoing and project yourself. And I had to work on that a lot.
But that's such a good point that there's that psychology behind it, right? Of how you present yourself matters just as much as the words that you're saying. So Ramon, I want to pivot just a little bit and I want to talk more about your background because you have a very fascinating life. So you started on the path to entrepreneurship at the age of 18.
Yeah.
You have been through a number of different industries from construction to content generation to cat litter. So can you tell us more about your journey and ultimately how you ended up with Genius Litter?
Yeah. To your point, I've been an entrepreneur basically all my life. I had a construction company. I, you know, sold piñatas online. I had a blog about soap operas that got 30 million visitors a month.
It's amazing.
I'm not like one of those entrepreneurs that, you know, I had a problem, I fixed it, and this is my passion for the rest of my life. I am passionate about entrepreneurship, all kinds of different businesses. And I'm very passionate about figuring out, you know, the challenge and figuring out like, okay, we have a product or service or piece of content here. How can we drive traffic or sales or revenue or anything to it? Solving that puzzle piece each time, that's what I love doing. So that's why all my businesses are all across the board. You know, looking backwards, I tend to get attracted to very weird businesses like the soap opera. I had a dog ramp.
A little more niche.
Yes, it's very niche. How it was born was I had a dog ramp business that was doing pretty well. And my son loves cats. We always had cats. And the cats got sick. And it's like with dogs, you can very easily see it's not the normal self. With cats, because they're so independent, it's more difficult to see. So I didn't even notice our cat was sick based on her behavior. I just noticed something in the cat litter box. I asked the vet, how can I catch this sooner? And the vet said, like, there's nothing really you can do except like really pay attention to the litter box. Started doing research. I'm always interested in, you know, learning new things. And then one thing lead to another, I found a company in Europe that was manufacturing and developing this special litter that changes color if your cat has potential health issues. And I just reached out. And then a couple months later, we launched. When I started entrepreneurship, I remember my first ideas when I was 16, 17, 18. I spent a lot of time, you know, designing a business card and making a letterhead and, you know, coming up with the perfect name. I spent a lot of time on an idea before I actually even knew, like, mm-hmm. are people really want this? Are people going to pay for this? Is there a product market fit? Versus now, I want to find out if there's a product market fit as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. The soap opera blog, for example, I launched that in a day. Like, I was like, okay, get a WordPress blog, make a logo. And at that time was Microsoft Paint. I posted an ad on a freelance website, marketplace, trying to find a writer, mm-hmm. found one, and it just didn't overthink it. Just like, let's go live and then see how it goes versus writing a whole business plan and all that stuff. So what helps me a lot is just by starting as soon as possible and pivoting or learning along the way. Mm. And sometimes, you know, if the idea doesn't work, pivot or stop or move on to the next idea. That's what I advise people to just get started. Don't overthink.
Yeah, I think especially in things like marketing, when you think about branding or the slogan, it's so easy to get caught up in those details as opposed to actually being able to just action on your plan and give it a try. So let's move on to the pitch itself.
Yes.
In hindsight, what do you believe were the key factors that led to the Shark's investment? And how can aspiring entrepreneurs leverage those similar strategies in their own pitches?
I think they invest in people that know their numbers. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know your profits, revenue, then I think it's going to be very difficult for you. Because I'm just talking about stuff that you have control over during the pitch. Because yeah, of course, if a company has higher growth trajectory, the sharks are more likely to invest. But you know, you don't always have control over it. So be confident, have fun too, because at the end of the day, the sharks also invest in people. And also be okay to stand up for yourself. So I almost lost the deal. Mm-hmm. Like, it turned out to be a genius move, but if Mark Cuban didn't hop on,
it could have backfired.
Yes, it could have been instead of a genius, I would be, you know, an idiot. So I got lucky there, but it's very intimidating. Mm-hmm. Like, I watched Shark Tank since I came to the United States. These are like, you know, celebrities for me. So it's very, and then you have the lights and the cameras. And so it's very easy to get intimidated. But, you know, the sharks need you as much as you need them. Have that mindset. But definitely prepare. I wrote all the potential questions, like hundreds of mm-hmm. them, of like what particular sharks could potentially ask. And then I wrote the answers. And then practice and practice and practice and practice. And also have a clear story about your product, what problem it solves, but how also you're going to grow. Have a very clear story what you're going to do with the money.
When you came on the show, you had an impressive, what was it, 3.6 million sales mm-hmm. and north of 140K in profitability last year, which is really impressive considering that there are some really big names in the competitive space. How do you as an entrepreneur kind of navigate entering into a space that is highly competitive like that?
I know. It's literally me versus multi-billion dollar companies. So it's like Mars Pets that does $18 billion a year in pets alone. Mm-hmm. Then it's me, like, you know, a team of four people. So, you know, honestly, it is hard. It's not an easy category because their marketing budget is, you know, so big. Their team, the resources, and their connection in retail. Mm-hmm. Where we have, in my opinion, of upside is we can move much faster. Mars Pets, if somebody in marketing has an idea of like an ad or a promo or whatever, it has to go through 20 departments to get approved and will take 6 to 12, 18 months before they jump on it. Versus for us, we can come up with the idea today, shoot it this afternoon, go live tonight. Mm-hmm. And that also goes into going into different channels, launching new products, launching new regions or countries. So we can move much faster. The big companies like Mars, they don't deal with small mom and pop stores. They don't deal with small regional store chains. They only mm-hmm. deal with like the big retailers. And even though we'll never beat them, hopefully we can join them by them buying us. But, you know, there's still a lot of crumbs on the table for us to grow.
Right. There's a lot of areas that you can kind of lean into and zig where others zag in some ways.
Exactly.
So looking at the pitch itself, our producer mentioned before this that you would be open to some discussion around the pitch, some areas and thoughts of where we could kind of like look to improve. Are you still open to having a little segment where we do this?
Yes, I told her, like, yeah, I don't mind. Put me on the bench and critique. Should be fun.
I loved the pitch. I love the Kevin O'Puri. We love a good pun, a good dad joke kind of pun to tie things in together really nicely.
Yes.
It's so funny because you wouldn't strike me as an introvert really from that pitch. You definitely came across as someone who knows their business, knows their numbers, is very passionate about successfully scaling this and potentially, you know, exiting down the road. So I think for me, really, my feedback would be kind of around the marketing angle a little bit more. I think there's some really cool things that you could consider doing for Genius Litter around emotion-based marketing. One, people don't expect emotion-based marketing in kitty litter or in like pet care goods. So in a way, it would be almost unexpected and kind of disruptive. And you can do it in some really fun, creative ways. Like cats may have 9 lives, but make this one the greatest. Mm-hmm. With American marketing, I feel like emotions, anytime that we can be overdramatic in some ways, really does resonate well with a lot of audiences. So mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of fun opportunities there to identify more of those pain points for current pet owners. So for example, I don't know if you've seen the Farmer's Dog Super Bowl commercial. And I think this is such a great way to highlight something that's otherwise an everyday product of, you know, dog food, but it hits this emotional chord. So I'm thinking there's ways through like different influencers on social media. Everyone's pet has a social media account these days. You know, how many social media cats can you partner with? So Sprinkles the Cat on Instagram can tap into their audience network, but have a very feel good when you buy this product type of marketing base, I think could be really helpful. I think it was maybe Kevin or Lori who mentioned, hey, how do you lean into broader brand awareness? Is it through PR mentions of listicles of the best 9 ways to keep your cat happy and healthy, and finding ways to sneak in that organic PR marketing could be a really great way for you to continue to boost that awareness and have folks really go direct to the brand and purchase directly from site.
Yeah, thank you. And you're absolutely right. I think what I could have done a better job is indeed having a clear story of what sets us apart and how we are actually going to really compete with the Goliaths in this industry. I don't really have a clear answer yet. And the Sharks did talk quite a bit. Like I was there over an hour.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
But we talked significantly time about the competitors. So you're absolutely right. I think having a clear marketing strategy, like, you know, how we can get from 10 million to 20 million. I didn't really have a super clear story. So that's a very good point.
Yeah. But the nice thing is with storytelling comes naturally over time too. You got the good numbers there and the profitability, which I think really helped kind of sell in the Sharks. Mm-hmm. In the negotiation strategy, I really appreciated how you were very clear and upfront about potential exit strategies. Mm-hmm. I feel like oftentimes we don't really see that too much on Shark Tank. So what are your thoughts on the importance of having a clear exit strategy in place before seeking investment?
Yeah, I think a couple of reasons. So one, when I start a project, my time horizon is like 2, 3, 4 years before I get bored. Mm. So again, none of my projects were started because of a personal passion about product. With the pitch, you have to put yourself in a producer's seat. Like, is this good to be? When you talk with investors, put yourself in the investor's seat of like, if you would invest in another person, what would you want to hear or see? The return for an investor is not in the company doing anything except when there's, you know, an exit. So I thought it was important to tell, let them know, it's like, okay, this is the plan and this is what I want to do. So you will probably get your money back pretty quickly. This is not going to be like a 20-year project, because if I just keep running the business for 20 years, the Sharks don't get their money back or the investors. And because, you know, I'm an investor too, I would like to hear that. And exit plans change all the time. The reason why I like when I start even a business to have an idea of an exit plan is because if you want, for example, what's called a lifestyle business, mean like it doesn't really have a high growth, but you don't need external investors. It grows, but like slowly, but there's less stress. You don't have to focus on hyper growth, but it is profitable. So that's a totally different business than if you want to build something that grows over time and you need to have VCs. They want, you know, you to grow 100 to 200% year over year. It's a totally different business and you're going to have to make different business decisions based on what is your exit. Do you want to have an IPO? Do you want to just, you know, build a business that you can work from home and make $100,000 a year? You know, figure out like what is really what you want, and then you can basically reverse engineer.
Yeah, makes sense. Can you walk me through the negotiation piece of this segment? Is it happening as quickly as it's cut when the episode is aired? What was going through your mind in that moment?
Well, it was much longer than what was shown on TV. I have to say they edited really good. They didn't misrepresent me or the situation or anything. They just did a really good job. Mm. But what was really hard for me was you have to think in the moment. It's not that you can sit down, think about it for a couple minutes, call a friend. Well, right. Maybe you could call, like I've seen it in episodes, but it's not like you can actually really sit and think through this. Mm-hmm. You're standing there and they're looking at you and you have to respond. And that was hard for me because, you know, Robert, Lori, and Kevin were not budging of their offer of 15% for $250,000. Yeah. And that was too much. And then I came back like, what about 12? And he said, no. And it's like, okay, where are we going from here? So you have to really think on the feet. So it was very intense. And what changed was when I eventually said, like, listen, guys, mm-hmm. I came here asking for 4. I understand we have to negotiate. So I was willing to go to 8, but now we're from 8 to 15 is double. The valuation doesn't make sense for the numbers we're doing. Let's be realistic. And that's when Mark Cuban popped back up. So a good tip too is that just because a shark is out doesn't mean you can get him back in. You don't have to talk to that shark, but you can still try to convince them by focusing on the sharks that are still in, because they're still listening. They're still like, you know, looking at mm-hmm. you. And that's what happened with me. Mark Cuban went out first, listened to the whole spiel, and eventually, okay, you know what? I like it. Boom. But to be honest, when he said, I will give you 8%, but you have to say yes now, between yes. when he said that and me saying yes, that was very short. They added a little bit more drama in between, basically. Mm-hmm. But I think that was great TV.
Yeah. And the 2% advisory shares, I just thought was such a great way to ensure that you're maintaining that valuation of the company mm-hmm. without having to sacrifice too much equity for the capital. Was that always in a back of pocket for you? Or was it really on the fly when you had, you know, multiple sharks that were interested that you came up with the idea?
To be honest, I actually forgot who came up with that.
I think it was Lori. Lori may have mentioned it first.
I think so. I understand the concept, especially if you have existing investors in your business already. You know, they will not be diluted if you give out advisor shares because you typically have an employee pool already. So it was a great way. Yeah. I don't think I came in with that strategy. I think Lori brought it up and then I thought, oh yeah, this is actually pretty smart. Let's keep running with this.
Yeah, for making a decision on the spot, that's a, it sounds like it was a good one to make.
Yes.
Now that the episode has been aired for a few weeks, just curious to know, as Genius Litter continues to evolve post-investment, how are you balancing growth opportunities with considerations for potential exits? And how are you currently weighing in determining the optimal timing for an exit event?
Yes. So a lot of happens after the airing. You're going to get retailers reaching out to you, people, potential partnerships.
Selling out a product.
Yes. All the good stuff. So I'm really trying to maximize momentum at the moment. And yeah, talking with, you know, potential future acquirers, basically people that, you know, companies that maybe would be interested later down the line. But yeah, at the moment, we're really just focusing on capturing the moment, you know, talking to retailers, sending notes to all retailers like, hey, look at us. We've been featured on Shark Tank. Here's a clip. You know, do you want to carry Genius Litter? So that's really the phase we're in right now.
Just super exciting just to keep that momentum going. It's kind of like virality, except in a TV sense in some ways. And how do you make that kind of sustain over time? So what are some things that folks can look forward to on the horizon?
Yeah, so what's going to set us apart is new product development because we can move faster than the competitors. So we have, you know, 2 new products, a doggy health indicating pee pad that checks mm-hmm. if your dog is sick. And then we have a topper litter. It's sort of like you sprinkle this topper on top of your existing cat litter and it changes color if your cat is sick. And then we're working on sort of a pregnancy test for cats.
Oh, wow.
So it's like same with litter. It will show if your cat is pregnant. So yeah, we're trying to really not be like a litter brand, but more an health monitoring pet, you know, technology company, where we come up with solutions and products that can help pet owners detect potential health issues earlier. Because the sooner you can detect health issues and address them, the better.
Right. And it's such a pain point, I feel like, for pet owners, because it's so hard to communicate with your pet, yet alone know when they need to go to the vet or not. Well, ending our interview, what was your favorite part of the Shark Tank experience? And was there anything that was surprising or unexpected in the process that you can share?
I mean, you go to LA day before, it's a pretty big ordeal. And you work with the producers a couple months before the airing date. There's a lot of steps involved. I was surprised how detailed, like, I even had to send pictures of what I'm going to wear, and it had to be approved by the network.
A lot of detail.
A lot of detail, yes. But even though I was super nervous, of course, I tried to really enjoy the moment because it was a dream. It was a bucket list of mine. So I want to enjoy the moment too. And not surprised, but everyone was so friendly and happy, even in the backstage, of like giving encouragement and tips and, you know, just really be very supportive. Just the whole experience was really, really fun and pleasant.
That's awesome to hear. I'm glad that you were able to finally, after so many attempts, be able to get on the show. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us more today. I'm super excited to see what's next for Genius Litter, but also for your next project and your next venture. So if any of our listeners are interested in Genius Litter, they can check it out at www.geniuslitter.com. And we'll also do a quick plug for your Twitter as well. So you can follow Ramon and his adventures. His handle is at Ramon Van Meer on Twitter.
Awesome.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. This was fun. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Production for today's episode was brought to you by Ari DeSarma. Editing comes from Robert Hartwig and support from Alfred Schultz. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you subscribe to the greatest podcasts ever. That does it for me. See you next week in the tank for another bite. To take a break to tell you about a podcast coming to the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. It's called The Next Wave, AI and the Future of Technology. It's hosted by Matt Wolf and Nathan Lands. AI technology is transforming the way we do business, and the media landscape is currently fragmented. The Next Wave is leading the pack on AI technology and how you can apply it to growing your business. Matt and Nathan are leading AI creators and your guiding light in the AI and technology frontier. Listen to The Next Wave wherever you get your podcasts.